from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, it's B-Mac behind the glass. It is a Friday edition, a getaway edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Blankers, I want the best for the Houston Texans. I really do. I like football. I like the NFL. I love this city. And I want the best for the football team in this city. I'll admit that the Houston Texans haven't necessarily captured my heart the way that the Oilers did. Because, I mean, the Oilers were, whenever I was young, my formidable years when sports were like the most important thing in the world. So I grew up going to games, right? Going to the Dome. Wearing the Love You Blue. Wearing the Oiler Derek. Like, I have fond memories of that, even though the Oilers never won anything of significance. I understand that. The Texans have never been able to capture my heart that way, and I'm not sure that they ever will. Like, even if they win a Super Bowl, sports just matter less now than they did when I was young. And sports very important. Obviously, it, you know, puts roofs over our head. Very grateful, very fortunate for that. But I do want what is best for the Houston Texans. And the reason that I'm saying this is because Cal McNair today spoke on the radio over on the Highway to Hell for 45 minutes today.
Oh my.
45 minutes of Cal McNair today. And Hannah McNair. Hannah McNair was right there by his side, cleaning up all of his mess.
She's running it.
I think she should.
I don't disagree with that either.
I think she should be running it. I don't know. And look, this is coming. The reason that I opened that way is because this is coming from me giving the Texans the advice that I would give some like franchise and organization that I love. Because look, the Texans are my favorite franchise currently in the NFL. No doubt about it. I want the Texans to have success more than any NFL organization. There's no doubt about it. And it's very easy for people to like hate on the Texans, and they deserve it right now, quite frankly. They've been an embarrassment the last few years. Bill O'Brien drove the organization to the ground. All of those, the Easterby effect, all of it. Like, they've been an embarrassment the last few years, and I believe that Cal McNair's heart is in the right spot of like getting the Texans out of this. Mm-hmm. Getting the Texans out of this dumpster fire and this hole that they created for themselves. I really do believe that, and I think that he's capable of doing it. But if I'm giving advice to the Houston Texans, because, again, I care for them deeply, this isn't just some hater being like, oh, well, listen to rumbly, you know, dumb Cal McNair. They have to stop letting Cal McNair speak behind a live microphone. If you want to read a statement ahead of a coaching search, fine. Do that once or twice a year. Do it again when you hire the next guy. If you want to be transparent, which Cal McNair said he wanted to be transparent in this whole search, okay, be transparent, but make sure it's a written statement that everybody's looking over and then you tweet it out. They cannot let Cal McNair speak behind an open microphone ever again.
I don't disagree, Jeremy, because I've had experience, but maybe from a different perspective with Les Alexander. We used to try and keep Les Alexander from a hot mic because he was a loose cannon, but he was a very intelligent guy. He just didn't have a filter for saying whatever was on his mind. And so it was a scary proposition for us. We used to try and give him bullet points. There was a time when we were trying to get win an election for the vote to get the new arena approved. And he would do a press conference with the mayor, and he would say something off the cuff and very out of line towards the mayor or someone else, and everybody would just gasp going, oh, we just lost votes. Oh, my God, it's going to get close. But you knew he was a smart man because he made his money on the stock market doing a lot of very intelligent things.
Uh-huh.
When you hear Cal, it's the same thing, only different. You're like, he can't even read right, because you saw him with the press conference addressing the firing of Lovey. And he couldn't even put the sentences together that were right there in front of him to just read, let alone the danger of going on live radio for 45 minutes and someone in the organization thinking that was a bright idea and that he wasn't going to step all over himself.
Look, I don't think that there's damage there, right? Like what he said, all of that, like it makes you like wonder, like it makes you think some things about the organization. He doesn't say anything that causes you damage. He doesn't say anything that, like, you know, the PR staff's going to have to come clean up. Like, he doesn't do that. But you ask him a question, and it's like, what are you going to do with this coaching search? What are some questions you're going to ask? oh, I hadn't thought about that. So it's like, man. It gives you more fear from like a confidence point of view. Like it makes you scared and makes you like lose all hope. Because look, I'm hopeful going into this offseason. I'm hopeful with a new coach. Hope it's Benny Johnson. I'm hopeful with the number 2 and 12 pick of the NFL draft. I'm hopeful with $40-something million to spend on cap space. I'm more hopeful than some, maybe not deserving, that Nick Caserio can be a decent general manager in the NFL. When Cal McNair speaks for 45 minutes, a lot of that hope that I just mentioned gets cut in half because he's the guy. He's the head of the snake.
Yeah, no, and that's the real danger in this, because when you think about some of the things that he even said, the first thing you think about is, hey, I'm really glad that they're going to get more people involved this time around then, because you can't just leave it all to Caserio, but you have to have a couple of other smart voices in the room to be able to get all the intel that you need to make the right decision this time around for a head coach when it's so imperative you get it right this time. That's scary, man, because he is the head of the snake. He is the leader. And I'll tell you this, Jeremy, and I saw this again yesterday on the news, and it really kind of resonated with me even more, because we started out kind of tongue-in-cheek, a little bit half-joking that Hannah was running the show. But then the more you saw things, and even Paulie was talking about when they were doing the press conference and he asked a question and she was sitting in front of him and turned around and she answered it and basically was saying, we are going to be more involved too. Well, then I watched on the news last night and there was a video in the last home game of Cal and Hannah and their, I think it's their son, walking on the sideline and some of the media members trying to ask Cal questions, and he was behind Hannah. She was turning and looking directly back and waiting to interject to basically say, okay, that's enough. Almost like his PR agent.
To who?
To the media members trying to ask Cal questions. And I couldn't recognize who they were, but they had recorders and they were following them around. And she was basically hawking everything just like a PR person would do. And I'm like, she gets it. She's very, very sharp. And you could be in a lot worse position if finally, I don't care if he gets credit for it, but right, if she takes the reins this time.
I don't think that Cal's necessarily dumb. I really don't. I think that, and maybe that's giving him the benefit of the doubt, and I try to give Cool Cat Cal the benefit of the doubt, because I'd like to play golf with Cal. I'd like to have a little whiskey, Gentle Ben, some of the bourbon, double cask strength bourbon, with Cal McNair. I would like to do all those things. I think Cal would be fun to hang around with, and we've heard that, you know, Cal could have a pretty good sense of humor, that he's fine when it's not, you know, the red light's not on and he's not in the public eye. And I don't necessarily think that he's dumb. I really don't. I don't think that Cal is dumb. But he comes across that way. And mm-hmm. A lot of times, really, quite frankly, perception is reality.
No question.
And when you're building a brand, and the Texans are very brand conscious right now, they're caring about what their fans think more than ever because they've been a disaster the last 3 years. They're talking about changing the jerseys and having more of the fans in mind when it comes to, you know, the uniforms and things like that and things with the organization. So they're very brand conscious right now. So perception is reality when you're talking about the brand. And when the brand is sending out Cal McNair to talk about the organization, and he is the CEO, chairman of the Houston Texans, and this is the message that you're delivering, you're damaging the brand. And I'm not saying Cal's dumb. He just can't speak publicly. And if Hannah McNair wants to be the Speaker of the House for mm-hmm. the Houston Texans, if she wants to be the press secretary for the Houston Texans, where she is the voice of ownership, I'm totally cool with it, because Cal can no longer be that voice. And look, I'm not even saying it could be like that it's going to lead the Texans like 5 more years into the rebuild, that they can't win with Cal McNair at the helm. I'm not going to go that far, but when you're brand conscious and you're trying to sell hope to fans, that cannot be the message that is being delivered.
There's a reason why a lot of Fortune 500 and a lot of wealthy companies have an organizational spokesperson. There's a reason why rich people have a family friend that represents them, whether it be in real estate deals or press conferences and interviews or other things, because it's just not their forte and not what they're supposed to do. I don't think that this is going to affect the way they handle this coaching search and or the way they handle football operations. I think you're very much accurate, though, in saying the same way if Irsay and the Colts, you know, he keeps saying stupid, wild, and off-the-cuff things and does stupid things and gets arrested and things, there's going to be a certain persona that's going to follow the entire organization based on their number one representative doing the things that he's doing as the owner. The same thing with Cal. If we hear any more bumbling idiot stupidity when a microphone is front, it doesn't matter who you really are. It doesn't matter how smart you really are and all the things you have going on otherwise. The public perception is reality, that they are being run by some complete idiot. And that is not what this franchise needs right now.
No, because if you're selling the tickets, if you're like, We've talked a lot about this, too. Like, who you draft at number 2, who you draft at number 12 should not have any influence on selling season tickets. And I'm worried because the Houston Texans are all of a sudden listening to their fans so much that that could be an influence into their pick at number 2. Could be an influence in what they do with the draft, trading up. Like, the worst thing that could happen to me, like, let's say the fans in Houston. I think if you took this poll right now in the city of Houston, you get one player in this draft that you get that would entice you to go watch games at NRG Stadium next year. I think pretty unanimously, well, I shouldn't say that, but a majority of people would say it's Bryce Young.
No question.
If you get one player, city of Houston, that if the Texans pick would entice you to go watch games at NRG Stadium, I think the answer overwhelmingly would be Bryce Young. I'm worried that the Texans, who are now all of a sudden so concerned about the fans' point of view, even though it's not the best thing for the organization, what if you're all of a sudden coupling 2 and 12 to move up one spot to guarantee you Bryce Young because you're listening to the fans because they want Bryce Young. They need him to entice them to go to NRG Stadium. That's something that worries
me. If Texans.com puts out a poll and he follows it, we're all in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
It's really because everything you hear from this guy is like he's trying to be the man of the people. Everything you see, the video that they put out from flipping burgers to, you know, this uniform thing, I hope it gets here and I hope it really does wow everybody because he can't stop dangling that carrot as being the likability factor for Cal.
They mentioned the uniforms again today on Highway to
Which,
Hell.
I mean, I understand pitching that. You want to build excitement for merch and you want to be able to sell merch. I don't care if they went out there in their practice jerseys as long as they're winning 12 games and making the playoffs. I could not care
this
less
is
what
so
they're
much
wearing.
Significantly bigger than whatever they do with the uniform and the logo. You have to get this right. You have to keep this thing going in the right direction. You have to get impactful players, especially with the two in the first round, that are going to help you to continue to get better and better the worst roster in football. So I don't give a rat's ass what color scheme you use and what your logo looks like. That's all like third, not even fourth, not even secondary. It's way down the list for me because of so you got to get your coach right. You got to get your roster better. You got to get the draft right. You got to do these kind of things. Those are the things that are hyper important. I can't worry about how you're worried about your image enough to try and be out there more and convince people that you're going to be more involved. Scary stuff right there to him to say that. But then to keep pushing the uniforms and pushing the irrelevant things to what we really care about, it's frightening. It is extremely frightening because this guy does not, he's the guy that's like trembling as he puts his hand over the button. You don't know if he might just push it and go, I wonder what this button does. I think I'll try it.
Yeah.
I mean, he just doesn't seem like a guy that
he's completely uncomfortable in this spot. I mean, listening to this interview today, for nearly every answer, he had 1-2-word answers until Hannah stepped in, until he got asked about barbecue and what his order was at Whataburger.
See?
Then he had answers.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, the HRP listener line, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel for all your complaints. I'm at Jeremy Branham for all of your praise. Can you trust Cal McNair? Do you have confidence in him to make the right decisions for the Texans? With him at the helm, can the Texans have a sustained success of an NFL organization? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Do you trust Cal McNair to lead an organization? Because he was on the radio for 45 minutes over on the Highway to Hell, and he was a bumbling, he was a rumbling, it was a disaster. Hannah McNair was there by his side to try to clean up the mess. Cal would say like and say like a word or two, and then Cal, like, Hannah would interrupt him, and then Cal would kind of sense that was what was happening, and then he would try to finish the answer. It was awful. It was terrible. And as somebody who wants the Texans to have success, I don't think you can continue to let Cal McNair speak publicly. Give him his little page that he has to read ahead of whenever you're going to fire a coach, whenever you're ahead to hire a coach. Have him do that 2 to 3 times a year. Have a written statement that you blast on the website, that you blast on Twitter 3, 4, 5 times a season. He wants to be transparent. I understand that. I respect that. You don't need to speak publicly to have that transparency. You can do that in other ways.
No, you're right. But at the same time, because you're trying, just the same way we said that no matter what happened with football operations, with Caserio, whoever the head coach is, whatever, that they were digging out of a hole. They weren't even starting from square one because of what Bill O'Brien left behind. Well, because of what this organization has behind them that they're still trying to get out from under, you can't sit there and give more ammunition to the local media, the national media, and the people that are scrutinizing every move of this team. And that is putting an owner out there that looks like a Muppet, that sounds like a guy that doesn't have it all under control, that looks like that Hannah might have her arm up his back and like a ventriloquist is trying to control everything that he possibly could say just so that they can keep him right on the road, you know, in the right lane.
Uh-huh.
And it's a scary proposition because it's such a vital time in the organization. It's the head coach. It's two first-round picks. It's rebuilding even more. It's digging out from all the things of the past. And the last thing you need to do is have a poster child out there for the fact that the more things are supposed to change, the more they're going to stay the same. And that's who Cal McNair is.
Part of that, though, feels like this was almost like a PR stunt to be able to present the image that Cal is involved. Because one of the quotes from Hannah McNair, when asked about misconceptions from both local and national media, Hannah goes on to say that, oh, well, Cal's actually 10 steps ahead, which... nothing about what we've seen from Cal McNair would ever suggest that he's 10 steps ahead. But this seems to be kind of like a ploy to go, hey, Cal's actually involved in the process. He's going to assist Caserio with the coaching search. And he actually knows more about what's going on than many people believe.
I mean, we know how it works with the flagship, right? He was never going to do this with us. He was never going to do it with 790. He was going to do it with the flagship because they're the ones that are supposed to protect him and guide him. And in a lot of cases, especially with Bill O'Brien, when he was at the helm, they wanted the questions ahead of time. They wanted everything signed off on before anything was even put out there live on the radio. This is the most important time to do something like that. Say, these are the questions we're going to ask you, Cal. Rehearse your answers, because they're even if you want them in the exact order, we can do that too. But here they are, and this is why, because everybody knows he's only talking to the flagship, and yet he still finds a way to botch them up.
Yeah, it begs the question, and Double Rod's asking us on Twitch, too, twitch.tv/ESPN975, our very best friends. He says, so he is capable of turning the franchise around but not speaking in front of a microphone. And I think that's a good question, because I don't – like I want to – maybe it's me giving Cal the benefit of the doubt and I shouldn't. I don't think he's a moron. I don't think that he's dumb. I think he just comes across that way. He's not great publicly, public speaking. I don't think he's great when the red light is on, when it's live, when it's hot. It's not his strong suit. He flat out admitted that. He admitted that in this whole 45 minutes. He said, look, it's not my strong suit. It's not an area of strength for me, which I can respect. Like, none of us have, you know, all of us have weaknesses in a bunch of different ways. The thing that concerns me, though, like my biggest takeaway from this is, people kind of celebrated the other day when Cal McNair is like, well, I'm going to be more involved in this search. I don't know if you can listen to Cal McNair for 45 minutes here and say, you know what? I want that guy to be more involved in the search. Because I hear it, and I want him to take a step back. I want him to get out of the way. I don't want him to have any influence whatsoever in who the next head coach of the Texans is. I believe that the Texans can have success. I believe that the Texans can build a winning franchise. I believe the Texans can get back to the postseason if they do things right over the next 3 to 5 seasons. But Cal McNair has to be willing to step aside. He can't be one that's making the decisions, because, no, I don't trust Cal McNair if he's a heavy hand and wears the crown and has all of this power to lead this team back. Now, can he hire the right guy? And, you know, the jury's still out on Nick Caserio. I think more people are out on Caserio that are in on Caserio. But I think they can go out and hire a head coach. Cal gets out of the way. Let head coach, let Caserio do all of the heavy lifting, do all of the hard work, and you sit back and play owner. But be a silent owner, and don't let the city of Houston listen to Cal and be like, man, that's the leader of our organization.
Here's where you hit on something. He can't be the heavy hand, but he can be in the process. Like, you can be in a brainstorming session and you can give your ideas and then you can formulate the plan and you can discuss the candidates. But if you're going to be the guy that is the end all be all and you're going to be a dictator at the end of the day and you're going to pick the guy, then I'm scared to death, because you need smarter football minds in the room. And you need, whether it's, like I said, whether they're getting outside help or not, it's obvious that they have been trying to change the narrative and do things entirely differently than they've ever done in the past, or at least in the near future, in the near past, in terms of how they do everything from transparency to, you know, owner, the way Cal is perceived, to who's going to be involved in this process as opposed to previous, all these things. But when you think about it, that's the same. If they're getting outside help or whoever's giving him the intel or and the advice has to say, hey, look, in order for us to make the right decision here, we don't need Corn Ferry. We need you to understand, trust the people that work for you to make the right decision. Because if everybody's in agreement on one candidate and he switches gears at the last minute and takes somebody else, then the whole rebuild could be shot. Because that's how important this offseason is going to be for this franchise.
713-780-ESPN. That's my biggest thing. Like, he says he was going to be more involved this time, and then I hear him speak for 45 minutes. I'm like, if anybody needs to not be involved, it's Cal McNair. Corey, it's hard to trust Cal when a lot of fans wanted Bob gone. Not only did he keep him, he made him a GM. I think that you can have this conversation. A lot of people did want Bill O'Brien gone after he blew the 24-0 lead against Kansas City on the road in the divisional round of the playoffs. That said, the Texans were kind of like, the Texans were a team that was up 24-0 at Arrowhead in the divisional round of the playoffs. And they had a young quarterback in Deshaun Watson that they thought was going to lead them to being a Super Bowl contender. I don't think the time was right to fire Bill O'Brien then. If you were going to fire Bill O'Brien during his tenure, to me it would have been 2014 when he was flirting with different teams. I would have moved on and I would have brought in Kyle Shanahan. Whenever he lost to Kansas City, I don't think there was any chance that he could possibly be fired. They were a good team. They had Deshaun Watson. The arrow was pointing up on the organization. Now, that offseason, they did some very questionable things that you're like, what in the world are we doing? But you look at Cal, I think Cal handed him the rope to say, okay, you've talked about all this power. You've gotten GMs fired. You're going to be the general manager. You're going to lead the organization. If you succeed, great. If you fail, I'm going to fire you in four games, which he did. He fired him four games into the season after they were a team on the way up that had a young quarterback that went to the playoffs. So I don't think that Cal necessarily did anything wrong when it comes to Bill O'Brien.
Let me just push back just for the sake of conversation. I think as much as Bill O'Brien had success as the head coach of the Houston Texans, and a lot of times people don't want to admit that, and you and I have had that discussion. You have to give him props where props is due because he did have success. But I think he still could have been fired after that Kansas City game simply because of the fact that he, as a coach, made a lot of blunders that helped and contributed mightily to the Chiefs' comeback. Now, would it be a shocking proposition for a lot of people in the NFL? Sure. But you've seen owners that, for guys doing a lot less, just get tired of a situation. Heck, Brandon Staley could be coaching for his job this weekend, and his team made the playoffs. And he hasn't even screwed up yet, but he screwed up so many times before that he's on record, that he's on watch right now. I think Bill O'Brien could have been fired that offseason simply because Texans fans going into that game were like hopeful but probably expecting the worst. After the first half of that game or whenever it was that they got up 24 points, they thought, holy bleep, we can get there and we could possibly go further. And then to watch it all crumble in front of them and Bill O'Brien have a big part in why, I think he could have been fired in that offseason.
Especially since, and we heard it again today in this interview with the Highway to Hell, they again brought forth the notion that they want to be the owners that make the tough decisions. That was a major talking point during this interview. We heard it in the press conference earlier in the week. Firing Bill O'Brien after that game, after blowing the 24-0 lead, would have been a tough decision. The easy decision, I think, was to hang on to him and let it play out over the next season.
Firing him after four games.
That part, the easy decision after the KC game was to hang on to him.
Sure, yeah. I don't think it would have been very difficult to fire a coach in that spot.
Do you think that the four-game thing was more because of team performance or because of the whole undertaking behind the scenes of
all of the above?
Easterby and JJ, and then
I think a lot of
relationships
were strained by that point.
Yeah, all of the above.
Because I think the only thing that really got Cal to actually have the guts to do it was the fact that Jack got all these players to, if you believe what I've heard, and I think it's been out there, that Jack got all these players to say, if you've got beefs with Bill, give them to me. I'll go put them all on Cal's desk and put them in front of Cal. And Cal heard from JJ's, and he heard from all these players and thought, God, I got to do something, and did it. So, I mean, I don't have any confidence in Cal McNair. And previously, you keep saying, I'm sure he could be a smart guy. I've never seen that. I don't know what he's done except for inherit this team just like he's inherited a boatload of money and a lot of things that go with it. I'd like to believe that, but I can't believe that, kind of to your point, from what I've seen and everything I've known and heard, going from the rumors of playing video games on a bearskin rug in his office with no desk or chair.
See, I think he should be doing more of that. Honestly.
Right, like hands off.
Less head coaching process, right. More Call of Duty. Like, but let the football people
disagree,
make the football decisions.
But that's what I'm saying. The only thing that I can base my decisions on are what we see, what we hear, who we talk to. And from that standpoint, I'm not so sure he's that bright of a guy.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Do you have any confidence with Cal McNair at all? How hands-on, how hands-off should he be? Also, I want to talk a little bit about the NFL draft, because I'm hearing Bryce Young come up all the time. Should we even be discussing Bryce Young at this point? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. 4187, stop the Cal McNair hate, Blank and Branham. This is not really intended to be Cal McNair hate. I want the best interest of the Texans. I think that Blankers is on the same page. It's a lot.
We're trying to protect them from themselves,
we're
right?
We're giving them a word of advice. There's a lot of selling on hope right now. That's all the Texans can sell right now is hope. And quite honestly, I'm on board. Like, sign me up. I like the hope that the Texans have entering this offseason. I like most of the candidates on the coaching carousel list, the coaching search list that you have right now. I have my favorites, of course, Benny Johnson. DeMeco Ryans would make me excited. I want nothing to do with Sean Payton, but I'm also not going to sit here and lie to you that if they brought in Sean Payton, that job immediately has some, like, sway
some
in
cachet.
The NFL. It's got some cachet. It has respect around the league. I don't want to do it, but I would admit that they brought in a really good coach that has a really good resume.
They have the balls to go after a big name and just kick the tires.
Absolutely. So, like, I'm willing to admit all of that. I'm very excited that you have I hate that they lost, or won, and choked away the first overall pick, but I'm very excited with two picks in the top 12, all of the picks in the top 100, I think it's 12 overall picks in the draft. Like, very excited about that. Very excited about the cap space. Like, there's a lot of reason to be, like, to buy into the hope. The Texans are selling you hope. We're trying to buy into hope as football fans in the city of Houston. Football fans of the Houston Texans. When Cal McNair, who is the chairman CEO, he's the face of the franchise, whenever he speaks to an open microphone, all of a sudden it's like, oh, man, this is the guy that's leading us. This is the guy that's leading the organization where we're trying to buy hope. I'm not saying that it's going to cost you football games unless he gets very involved. I'm not saying it's going to prevent you from going to the postseason. But all that hope that you're trying to sell when Cal opens his mouth and sounds like a buffoon, I hate that it does sound that way, but it does. It's a matter of fact. It's truth. You all of a sudden lose what you're trying to sell, lot of it.
You're trying to keep him out of his own. At the same time, you're trying from a media to a fan perspective. Normally, we're hanging on every word because we want those nuggets that we're looking for in terms of who might be the leading candidate, who they've talked to, what kind of things they've gotten out of the people that they've already had discussions with. But instead, when Cal takes the microphone, you're not looking for those nuggets. You're waiting for that rubbernecking accident to happen that you can't stop looking at because you know it's coming. And you know at a certain point, he is going to trip all over himself and he's going to have everybody in the Texans office slapping their foreheads going, oh no. And you're going to have everybody in the local media pointing their finger and snickering. And you're going to have everybody in the national media going, this owner is freaking clueless. And you're going to see him line up. Florio and everybody else that likes to rip into him and know how embarrassing they can be. This is what we're trying to do. Just don't let him speak. At a certain point, Les Alexander realized the general manager is a better, and not much, everyday contact for the media to be able to speak and represent what the team is doing. So he got out of the way, and that's what Jeremy's saying. Get out of the way so that you're not the bumbling idiots of the NFL anymore, and it looks like you know what you're doing.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Corey brings up the point. Then Cal should have fired O'Brien as soon as he brought the D-Hop trade to the table. This is the interesting thing to me, because after hearing Cal McNair today for 45 minutes, after hearing him at the press conference on Monday, Cal McNair said he's going to be more involved in the coaching search. I don't want Cal McNair more involved in the coaching search. I want Cal McNair to have the football people involved in the coaching search. Obviously, that would be Nick Caserio if he brought in an inner circle. Maybe that's what he means. I hope that's what he means. Maybe he brought in an inner circle of Andre Johnson, of Jonathan Joseph, of Gary Kubiak. I don't know what the inner circle
maybe
is.
Maybe JJ now is someone he's going to lean on.
Maybe. JJ probably not, because, you know, he's JJ. He's got bigger things to fry than that. But whoever. Like, it doesn't matter. Maybe Cal will lean on them. But Cal should not be making football decisions. And that kind of goes back to the DeAndre Hopkins trade. Is that, do you really want Cal McNair meddling in trades, coaching searches, free agent signings, draft picks? Because I frankly don't. He should have meddled in that one, but you can't say you don't want a meddler, and then all of a sudden he's meddling.
Here's what I think, Jeremy, and I've said this to you before. I don't think that Cal knew about the trade, or he didn't have a say in the trade, or O'Brien didn't bring him the trade. I think he was so hands-off at that point, because the only hope that I would have is if he truly has these people that he's going to get involved this time around, even if he isn't the sharpest utensil in the drawer, that at least he could go to some of these people that he's now getting involved in certain things and going, hey, they're telling me that they think this is the guy. What do you think? Get some other second and third opinion before you as the owner decide to go in a different direction or make your own call, which could completely paralyze this franchise going forward instead of looking at a playoff appearance in the next 3 to 5 years. It's scary, but at least, you know, I think what they're trying to do is give you the hope that, hey, this time around, I'm going to be more involved, and so are these people. We don't know who they are that are going to be involved. Well, I hope these people are football people, and they are of sound mind and body to be able to talk him out of idiotic moves and talk him through and into the right moves. Because I literally don't believe he ever probably even saw or thought twice about the Hopkins trade.
Lamont says, I didn't see anything wrong with Cal speaking. Practice makes perfect. He needs to speak more to get comfortable. I understand that logic. Like, the older George Bush was not good at public speaking, and the way that he learned was by doing it every single day. Like, George Bush, the older one, was not very good at speaking publicly. So how did he combat that? Well, he held, like, press conferences every single day to get better at it, and also to kind of, like, take away the weight of when he does speak. And that's kind of the Cal McNair thing. To Lamont's point, Cal McNair speaking once every year or twice every year, it makes that one or two moments big, right? It makes them huge. Oh, Cal McNair speaking today. That's a huge moment. If he did it 365 times a year, they're all very, very small, and then you have the repetition. So Lamont, from like a practical point of view, I would agree with that, but I wouldn't agree with Cal McNair like speaking that often. And it also...
But here's what I would suggest. Join the Rotary Club. Let him go speak to all these different charitable people and these luncheons and get his practice that way. Don't practice in front of all the cameras and media that are going to slice you and dice you for every time you trip over your own tongue.
Yeah, you can't let that be the one time.
Right.
Like, yeah, exactly. 5856, Cal knows his limits. That's why he hired Nick. At least he's not some arrogant know-it-all like Jerry Jones. 5856, I agree with that. Like, I don't disagree at all with that. But knowing your limits is also, like, and Cal knows he's not good at public speaking. Just stop it. Just stop doing it. And some people, I was tweeting about this earlier today, and one of the counter arguments was, well, people were crushing him for not speaking. So what? No one's ever going to be completely happy with what you do. If there's always going to be some people that are going to be angry that you're not speaking, there's going to be some people like us that are saying you shouldn't speak. You have to do what's the best thing for your organization. Nothing's ever unanimously going to please everybody. What is best for the organization? Is it for Cal McNair, the chairman CEO, to sound like a buffoon for 45 minutes? It's not.
But remember, Jeremy, as much as I even said, go do the Rotary Club, go do the charitable speaking events, get your reps in. Here's the problem with that, too, because not like it's not going to be as malicious and it's not going to be as savvy as the media members that you're speaking in front of. But let's not forget, a little speaking engagement at his country club at River Oaks cost him dearly a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, too, by, again, tripping over his own tongue, saying something he shouldn't have said. I just speak from a position of experience in saying, from an organizational standpoint, you need as many people as possible in that room that can get his ear to say, stop doing the media. Just stop doing it. You want to get reps? You know what? Talk to Hannah at night and stand on a soapbox and hold yourself, you know, a karaoke mic and work on it. But don't do it where anybody has a cell phone or a video camera or a microphone, because every time you do it, you set your whole organization back and you give your fan base zero confidence they're going to get anything right.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, let's get to the conversation that we teased a moment ago. Do we even need to be talking about Bryce Young to the Texans at this point? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about Frankie's Italian Kitchen. It's Frankie's Italian Kitchen, TX.com. They are open for business, and the food is fantastic yet again. The menu has increased, it's expanded, but it's still the best Italian food in the city. And now there's just so much more. There's Dino's Bar, named after Dean Martin. It's big, it's luxurious, you can be comfortable there. You can get great alcohol and watch all the games there, including this weekend for the NFL games. And you can sit there with friends and family and spread out and feel like you are at home. It is absolutely fantastic. Chris Smith, the owner, could not be more excited about a venue that now is double the size of the old location and still allows him to be the chef that cooks up all the great meals for all the customers, but it also allows him to have more people in and more families and friends feeling like they are in an environment amongst their closest comrades, because it is absolutely unbelievable. Clarence was there yesterday. He was talking to me how great Chris was, how concerned he was about how everybody's meal was, and the fact that everybody was satisfied with being in the restaurant. He also takes it to another level. When there's a special or he's pairing it with a wine, he has his staff actually sample it and understand why it goes together, and that therefore then they can recommend it to the people and know it's the right recommendation for the best possible meal and wine combination that they could have. The lunch specials are still there. They do it all the same way, only in a bigger location. The new location, north side of FM 1093 between Spring Green and FM 1463. It's right off Highway 99 in the Katy, Richmond, Fulshear, Sugarland area. It is just, it's worth the drive, and it is the best in the business. I'm telling you, I've been speaking up for them for a long time, but I speak up for them because I believe in the great food and the ownership of Chris. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by. It's Frankie's Italian Kitchen, TX.com.
Loaded, ready to rule. You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I just made my third lifetime bet against the Twitch chat. I'm undefeated. Who is going to be the one that finally defeats Branham in a Twitch bet chat? Todd, the show, and I just made a bet. Won't disclose the information of the bet, although you can look at Twitch and see it.
Is it a Giants bet?
It involves some monetary dollars.
But I'm saying, I'm saying Todd is a Giants fan. So is
nope.
It? Okay.
Nope. It involves Benny Johnson.
Oh.
It involves Benny Johnson. Todd thinks that Benny Johnson will not be hired by any NFL team in this coaching cycle.
Stop it.
I'm saying he will be hired by an NFL team in this coaching cycle. So Todd and I got a couple of doll hairs on the line.
I think you're going 3-0.
I think you are too.
I think I'm gonna go 3-0. I'm just saying. I'm pretty good when I'm making bets against Twitch. They all tell me how dumb I am, yet I'm 2-0 against the Twitch chat. It's interesting to me. Bryce Young. A lot of people think he's the best player in the draft. Todd McShay thinks he's the best player in the draft. Most people think he's the best player in the draft. I think he's probably the most popular player in this city that they hope the Texans pick at number two. You think all of what I just said is fair? It's all fair, right? Sure. Do we need to continue having the Bryce Young conversation, though, at this point? What are the chances? Because if he's not sliding to two, mm-hmm. Why are we talking about Bryce Young? What are the chances that Bryce Young is there at two?
I think there's a chance. I think it's because of the fact that the Bears have to find a trade partner. And the team that they find to partner with has to be enamored with Bryce Young. I think the reason why I think you can slow the roll down a little bit on just anybody right now is because we know how quickly things change in the pre-draft process. We know the fact that there are guys that are the apples of everybody's eye, sometimes for a full college season, sometimes because of the playoff, sometimes because when the workouts start, they look just absolutely amazing in all the throws and things they can do. But by the end of it and by draft night, we know Vegas odds, which basically can be a really good indication of what's going to happen, can change and be night and day from what the talk was at the start of the process. And this is the start of the process. So it's entirely too early to be just zeroed in and say, because he isn't that slam dunk guy. This isn't the Trevor Lawrence draft where it was Trevor Lawrence and everybody else. This is where on any different day, it could be a different guy. We know that all of a sudden, because of the semifinal game, that C.J. Stroud suddenly looked like a guy that even Lance, I heard saying on the bench the other day, he went, whoa, I didn't see him being able to do those kind of things. Now I'm a little bit more interested to at least look at him again.
He's also not in the draft pool yet.
Right. True. But still, I'm saying that. But I'm just saying it from the perspective. We know who the three names that everybody have been kicking around. But even from that perspective, if your boy comes out of the gates hot in the first couple workouts that he does, and Levis looks like this machine that's doing everything right, he could be the next version of Ben Roethlisberger. Doesn't have to be from the powerhouse school, but if he comes in with all the tools, people are going to go, hey, this is a dude that has everything that any NFL team would kill for. And suddenly he could go. So it is. It gets to be premature because of the fact it can change so quickly.
The thing that I would say, but you didn't answer the question, though. Like, what are the chances that Bryce Young is not the number one pick?
Right now, I would say 27%.
That he's not.
That he's not.
See, because I agree with everything that you said. I don't think it's a slam dunk like other years. It's not Trevor Lawrence. It's not Andrew Luck. Like, it's not. There's some questions whether or not, like, how tall Bryce Young's going to measure in at. 5'10", 5'11".
Is he durable enough to take a hit?
Yeah. See, like, none of those are questions that you already know the answers to for general managers. Like, they still have evaluation to do, but nothing you're going to see from a GM scout point of view between now and the NFL draft is going to, like, way into that equation. Because all of that stuff happens on the field. Like, there's no, like, that stuff has already happened. That stuff is already in the books. It's already on tape. The only things that can happen from here on out are the measurables. How tall is a guy? How much does he weigh? The hand size, like, we mock it a lot of times, but the NFL ball is bigger than the college football. So, you know, hand size is going to come into play. Because it's going to, even if you don't think it matters, like, even if you don't think hand size impacts how good of a player is, a quarterback in the NFL, it also matters to GMs, though. Like, you can't ignore that. Like, what do the Chicago Bears firmly believe? You have to have at least a 9-inch hand to be an NFL quarterback, and Bryce Young comes in at 8.5. All of a sudden, it's like, okay, well, that's going to be an influence.
We've
that's
heard
going
Randy
to be a
Mueller.
Factor.
We've had different people that we've come on have different opinions. But you're right. There are going to be teams that are hell-bent on the fact that if you don't measure up your hand size, your height, your weight, those kind of things with the physical traits, then you're not going to be our guy. We've talked about the fact that Caserio in the past, with all the quarterbacks the Patriots have taken, there has been a pretty prototypical set of standards that they expect before they take a quarterback, and Bryce Young isn't that type of guy. So we don't know what teams are going to be enamored. We don't know how this is all going to play out.
No, we don't know that at this point. But the other day, I was actually listening to the Little House yesterday, taking my oldest to jiu-jitsu class, and I was listening. They had Randy Mueller on yesterday, and I was laughing because I know Randy Mueller doesn't like small quarterbacks.
Right.
We've had that conversation with him. So they were asking him about, you know, Bryce Young and his size, and Mueller was going, I don't really want to hitch my wagon to a very small quarterback. And I'm sitting there wondering to myself, if we assume that Bryce Young is the number one overall pick, why are we still talking about Bryce Young in this city? If we think it's 25% chance that Bryce Young is there, then we probably still need to have that conversation. That's why I asked. But if it's less than 10%, we could probably stop talking about Bryce Young altogether with the one exception. I wanted to define what are the chances that Bryce Young's there at 2. 25% chance, I'm good with 25%. We can go with that. If you disagree, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. But there is also another angle that you would have the Bryce Young conversation. It's not just if he's there at number 2.
If you trade up?
If you trade up to number 1. 25% chance, you said those are the odds that he would be there at number 2 in your mind. Is there any way that the Texans trade up to number 1? Is there any way, if you were the general manager of the Texans, you're trading up to number 1?
If I'm the general manager of the Texans that's currently sitting in that seat, with as hot as that seat's getting, with the fact that he knows his butt's on the line, I think he just got the scapegoat he needed. I think there's more to the actual notion that we started talking about right after they blew the number one pick, that this might be a blessing in disguise for Nick Caserio specifically, because he has made the missteps that have made people pay attention to where now he can say, well, I couldn't have gotten him. Because, you know what, now I don't have to worry about a guy that I didn't want to take anyway because he's too small and you know, he doesn't have the measurables. Now I got a bailout, so I don't have to take him. So I don't think he's going to want to trade up to put himself right back in the crosshairs of being scrutinized if he doesn't take him and he does well. This is kind of like with the Rockets when the draft picks fell where they may, and suddenly there wasn't any pressure on Rafael Stone because he took what was left. He took Smith because the other two guys were gone. The year before, you know, they wanted the what's his name from Detroit, that went to Detroit, but once they couldn't get him and Detroit took him, well, the next guy was Green, and they took Green, and then there's no pressure on him.
Yeah, I don't think that if I'm the general manager, there's no way I'm trading up to number one for Bryce Young. Like, I can have the conversation. I love Will Levis. I get made fun of for that. I understand. I can have the Bryce Young, Will Levis conversation. Depends who your offensive coordinator is. It's 1A, 1B when it comes to Levis Young. I'm much more interested in the Levis-Stroud fight because I think Levis is kind of head and shoulders above Stroud, which is a hot take, I understand. But if we assume that Young's not there at number two, then you don't have that conversation to begin with. You're not having that debate because it's not a debate to be had. It's also a reason that I'm not trading up to number one. Like, if you had the first pick and you're saying, I'm going to go Young over Levis, okay, like, okay, I understand. Different strokes for different folks. I'm not going to be mad if you have Bryce Young. I really like Bryce Young. I think he's very, very good. I think under the right system and in situation, I think he's going to be really good in the NFL. But at number two, if Young's gone, and you're telling me I have to go quarterback? That's where the argument, you know, has to be had. I think that's where the argument has to be. As far as trading up to number one with the assets that I have to give up, there's no way.
No.
I'm trading number 12 and coupling it with two to move up one spot in the draft to get Bryce Young whenever he has a lot of question marks as well.
And it's even more important than the Peyton conversation when it comes to what you'd have to give up to get Sean Payton. But you don't want to pull a move that the Bears had to pull twice. And they're still waiting to see if the jury's still out on if Fields turns out to be the guy that they had hoped Trubisky was when they did it the first time. You know, you can completely trip all over yourself and, again, set your rebuild back quite a ways no matter how much you advanced in other areas, and that's what you have to be afraid of. I don't think that you can afford to give up draft capital regardless, because there are multiple quarterbacks this year as opposed to last year, because there's other guys that you can possibly take, but you can't give up the opportunity to strengthen and build the rest of your roster with so many holes to fill and so much depth to rebuild. I just don't think it's something they can entertain at this point.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that option at all. We're kind of discussing, like, if we should be even having the Bryce Young conversation at this point. What are the chances he even gets to number two? If it's less than 10%, if you feel there's no chance that Bryce Young's getting to number two, or less than a 10% chance that Bryce Young's getting to number two, I think you can stop having the Bryce Young combo debate.
And one other thing I was going to bring up when you mentioned about the difference in the size of the footballs, I think that people have scoffed at that. And I've heard people say the ball doesn't matter. It actually really does. And of course, I speak from where I have the most expertise, which is in basketball. But we, in the past with the Rockets, took guys that were some of the best shooters in college basketball. And in certain cases, when the ball has wider channels, it's real leather, and it's heavier, it took guys 6 months or more to adjust and try to be the kind of shooter they were in college.
Yep.
So it can matter. And it's the same thing with throwing the football, just like shooting a basketball. If you're used to using a certain ball and throwing it a certain way all your life, and suddenly you get a real leather football that's heavier and a little bit plumper, then guess what?
Pleasantly plump.
Yes, you've got to make adjustments. And with that, your body mechanics and your muscle memory have to change. And it could take some time.
Football people that I trust, that I kind of scoffed at the notion that the ball makes a difference, changed my opinion on that. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Gary, you're in the Hive for the Killer Bees. What's up, Gary?
Hey, guys. Hey, good evening. Good evening. Hey, Sean Payton. First off, I wouldn't move up to take Bryce Young. I'd sit back. As far as Sean Payton and my thing about him, he coached the Saints. He won a Super Bowl with Drew Brees. After that Super Bowl, he laid the blueprint. He coached Troy Aikman and all that. So he's been around some great quarterbacks. After Drew Brees, Jameis Winston, the other quarterback, the white guy, I forgot his name, I apologize. So he's had all those, and he's not had success coming forward after Drew Brees acquired, just like Andy Reid, another coach who had was in Philly, did well, but not until he got Mahomes. So there's no perfect thing to saying that Sean Payton, if he did come here, would have success because he didn't for so many years after Drew Brees, and he got to handpick his players each year after that. The foundation was laid, and yet he couldn't replicate what he had done with Drew Brees. That's my take on that.
All right, Gary, appreciate the call. That's a good call. I like that. I thought there was an ending.
There was a vibe coming.
I thought that there was going to be a punchline there.
That Dusty Baker had just been named a candidate for the Texans coaching
job. I thought he was going to say they should have kept Lovie. That's what I thought.
You like the take that Andy Reid had no success in Kansas City before Pat Mahomes got there?
Well, yeah.
I mean, I hope you saw Dusty on the Rockets game the other night because he lives in Sacramento.
I agree with Gary, though, that they shouldn't hire Sean Payton. But, yeah, Andy Reid did have success before Pat Mahomes. 713-780-ESPN. BZ Money. We got to change the rules of BZ Money in a little bit because there's only six games in Wild Card Weekend. Mm. But the Killer Bees, every single week of the NFL season, we have picked a game right. Every single week. We do it again next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we get to the break, I want to tell you about my bookie. As Jeremy just said, big weekend in NFL football. Six games in Super Wild Card Weekend, and there's only one place that I tell you you should go if you want to make those games more interesting and more exciting and have a chance to be more beneficial to you by making some money, MyBookie.ag. Because MyBookie.ag takes care of you every step of the way. They always do, but they always trying to do something to make sure that you as a customer feel like it's a great thing to be associated with them. They're doing it yet again. There's a new deposit bonus. It's a 10% cash bonus on any first-time deposits up to $2,000. And all you got to do to get it is, once they put it in your account, you bet it once, and if you win, you're done. Take the money out, go to the mall, go shopping, pay some bills, do whatever. But there aren't all these other stipulations. Just you get it in your account, you bet it once, and then you're all set and ready to go. It's a new year, it's a new you, so why not give yourself a new start at mybookie.ag? Use the promo code BET975 on a deposit of $50 or more, up to $2,000. Get a cash bonus instantly to your MyBookie account. Bet it once, and you are ready to take it out and use it how you may. NFL, UFC, NBA, or play for a share of big cash prizes in that weekly online blackjack tournament. You can use it so many different ways and gamble and make your plays. MyBookie.ag, use the promo code BET975 for the best deposit deals in the industry. As I always tell you, bet anything, anytime, anywhere, with the only place I tell you to do it. MyBookie.ag, promo code BET975.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.